Hello and welcome to How Do You Feel? The show that is dedicated to your health and wellness and is currently sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I am your host, Lorraine King, and today I am visiting with Elizabeth Hensel.
That's correct.
And she is a licensed clinical social worker who's going to engage us in conversation about substance use, which we typically hear the term substance abuse, but that's been changed. And so we're going to have to adapt with the change. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. So I know that you're going to talk about substance use, and the substance use is about a couple of substances that are not approved. Well, they could be approved, but then people may use them in a way that they're not supposed to. So you're going to talk about your strategy for assisting them in breaking themselves from a particular addiction or abuse. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So with the DSM-5, which is what therapists and doctors use to talk about psychiatric disorders and to diagnose them, they changed over the term from substance abuse to substance use to help to destigmatize and help people understand that that addiction to substances is based in disease, and so we should treat it like a disease. And so that terminology changed a little bit to help people not feel like having problems with drugs and alcohol are a moral failing, but that it is related to the disease of addiction.
So it's to help alleviate some of the stigma attached to that, because it happens so frequently that we should treat it like we would any other illness, just like if it was pneumonia or something like that.
Absolutely.
To help people get well and healthy.
Yes. And, you know, one of the ways that people who work in substance use treatment is to view it like diabetes or something like that, where there's medications that can help manage some of the problems with substance use. And also, you know, we don't want to say that, you know, like with diabetes, the substance use, maybe someone's really compliant with their medication for a while for diabetes to help treat it. And maybe they're doing really well and they're not eating too much sugar. And then maybe they kind of slip back. And so the way we view substance use treatment and recovery is it's not linear. And to kind of help people know that there's support out there to treat this disease and that recovery is possible for them.
And so we want to help them feel comfortable coming forward to get help if they need help, because it's been so stigmatized that people might hide it, their family might hide it and not want to address it. If we address it openly, we probably could eliminate a lot of the misuse of those substances in our society.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there is so much stigma about admitting that you need help and getting connected to resources, that the more we do to normalize that for people, mm-hmm. The more likely they are to seek out treatment. And at the Peoria Health Department, in conjunction with Heartland Health Services, we offer a couple of treatment options that are outpatient-based to help people with opioid use disorder. That would be heroin or prescription painkillers, and also alcohol use disorder. While alcohol's, you know, not illegal and a lot of people are able to drink it in a safe amount or, you know, in a socially responsible way, there are people who find that they can't do that anymore. Same with some prescription painkillers. Maybe they were prescribed a medication by a doctor and before they know it, their body is dependent on it. And so oftentimes what we see is that when people are really deep into addiction and substance use disorder, that they're no longer just trying to get high or get drunk. They're just trying not to get sick because the body has become so dependent on that substance just to feel normal.
Wow. And so then you're going to also talk about medication-assisted treatment. So can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah. So the FDA, who regulates prescription medications in the United States, has approved treatment for two types of substance use disorders, and that is for opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder.
And then could you remind our listeners again, when you say opiate, which substances you're referring
sure.
to?
Sure. We're talking about anything that's a prescription painkiller or that you could either get at a pharmacy or buy on the street, and that would be something like OxyContin, Valium, fentanyl, morphine, or we're talking about heroin as well, that can often be bought on the streets. What we're finding more and more is that fentanyl is often in any of these products that are bought on the street, and we know that fentanyl is very dangerous for people who, especially those who are maybe just new to using the substance.
Why is it important for us as a community to destigmatize the use of alcohol and other drugs? And then what are some of the ways that we can do that, or that the health department is already doing?
Sure. So if people are seeking outpatient treatment for alcohol use disorder or opioid use disorder at the health department, we provide medication-assisted treatment, which combines both medication prescribed by a medical provider as well as counseling. And the reason that it's important to do these together is that most people don't just wake up one day and decide to have a problem with drugs and alcohol. It's mm-hmm. usually a slow process, and mm-hmm. it's usually based in trauma and, either undiagnosed or undertreated mental health conditions. So we see those playing a big part. So what we offer at the health department through Heartland Health Services is the treatment for opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder. And there are prescription medications that help people deal with the cravings as well as the withdrawal symptoms of those conditions, so that they aren't worried about getting sick, they aren't worried about feeling bad, and then we work on the social-emotional part of what's kind of led to their substance misuse.
Now, when you say medication-assisted, I know that different people respond differently to different medications. So is there some kind of medical evaluation that they get before you decide what medication you're going to use or how much of it?
Sure. So they would meet with our primary care provider, and they would have regular lab work done to make sure, are they healthy? A lot of people who have opioid use disorder, who have injected drugs, may have developed hepatitis C at some point, so they may have issues with the liver or other co-occurring things. So we work both on providing them like whole care for medical care. And then the most common medication for opioid use disorder that we prescribe is buprenorphine or Suboxone. And it is taken daily, sometimes up to 3 times a day, and helps people with those cravings and any kind of withdrawal symptoms they might have. Because when someone's dependent on opiates, they feel like they have the worst flu ever when they don't get them. And so, the side effects to that can be really bad. And this medication is safe and effective and helps control those side effects of not getting the drugs that they were using previously.
So can you tell us the name of that medication
sure.
again? And then let us know, is it a liquid or is it an injection or what kind of
that's
form
a great
is
question.
It in?
So the medication is called buprenorphine. But it also goes by the name Suboxone. So that's usually what you hear people say.
What do they say?
Suboxone.
Suboxone.
Yes.
Okay.
And it is either in tablet form or in film form that they let dissolve. It's like a little film that you let dissolve on your cheek. There is also an injectable option for people who we know respond well to the medication, and they can get that injection once every 28 days. And so that's helpful for people who don't, want to daily think about medication or maybe have trouble with managing medication. Mm-hmm. That can be a helpful alternative. And then for alcohol use, we have a couple of options. There's an injection called naltrexone, and they get that once a month. Or they can take oral naltrexone, which is a pill. Mm-hmm. Or there's a medication that we've had some success with patients called acamprosate, or Campral, and that helps curb the cravings for alcohol. It helps them not think about it. They don't want it so much. And then if they do decide to drink after they've taken the medication, they don't get the euphoric effect that alcohol normally has on people. So it helps them to find other ways of dealing with whatever's going on other than drinking to relieve, discomfort or pain.
So how long has the health department offered this service to people in our community? Because I don't recall ever hearing about it.
Yeah, so we partnered with Heartland, and I started back with the health department about 4 years ago, and about 3.5 years ago, we had our first patient to come in. And so we've served quite a few patients in the Peoria community, as well as the surrounding area, to help get access to this medication. And then Heartland also offers this at some of the other sites as well, with different providers there. And there's also other places in the community that people can find this treatment. There's even a link on the Peoria County Health Department's website to finding a provider that will help people get in connection with this medication treatment.
Well, do you partner with other organizations? For example, I think that I've read that, you know, in some cases that police officers may have a drug or something with them that can counteract effects of the drug that the person might be hooked on. And so how do you do that?
Yeah, so if someone is suffering from an opioid overdose, there is Narcan, which is either...
That's the one.
Yeah, and it's either given as an injection in the muscle, or it can be given as a nasal spray. And so Unity Place actually offers a lot of free Narcan to the community. Pharmacies have Narcan that you can get without a prescription. You just have to pay the cost of it. And then we partner a lot with Jolt Harm Reduction in Peoria, and they are the local harm reduction center, and they give us a lot of referrals for people seeking treatment that come to them looking for harm reduction services and then are also interested in getting treatment so they can stop.
So how long did you say you've been doing this?
We've been doing it for about 3.5 years now.
3.5 years. Now, during those 3.5 years, Elizabeth, have you found that the problem exists disproportionately in communities of color, or is it like across the board kind of thing?
Yeah. So we know nationally, especially, that communities of color are disproportionately affected by opioid overdose death, and as well as just substance use in general. And they often lack access to treatment as easily, too. And, you know, I think we've found that in our clinic, that's often reflected in most of our patients tend to be white. And so, you know, we've often... wondered how do we get people more connected with these treatment options for themselves.
Well, you said that the national trend is that this misuse of substances is likely to occur in communities of color, but yet you're saying in our community that people who are getting treatment are not people of color. So I don't know if that's national or if it's just in our area, it's a national trend for that way, too?
I think that is, yes. And so, you know, looking at some statistics, because the health department does track mortality, mm-hmm. In 2021, the rate of overdose deaths was 34.3% for Black individuals.
In Peoria County?
In Peoria County, and 20.7% for white counterparts per 100,000 people. So people are dying at a higher rate from overdose deaths when you do the comparison of per population. Mm-hmm. So and probably a lot of that is, you know, not as accessible services in neighborhoods that people primarily live in. Whereas.
Yeah, because what I want to ask you is, so how do the people who are using your services find out this information, as opposed to people who live in the community that are people of color who are not taking advantage of this service?
Sure. So that's a great question. So we have this information available on our website. We try and, you know, do a lot of push out of information. And I think that's one of the reasons that we found this to be a really important topic to talk about on this program, is mm-hmm. hoping that people gain awareness and are able to get the word out to people that they know and care about. And the more people have knowledge of that, the more the community feels connected to those services. So that's kind of one of our hopes for talking about this on here.
So probably one of the obstacles or challenges in getting the information out is the means by which you offer it. If it's on the internet, and a lot of people who might be misusing the substances are not likely to go to the internet. So do you have other avenues that you disseminate the information? Like, do you go to schools or do you go to other service organizations and let them know that it's available?
We do not currently have any partnerships with the schools. Most of the hospital systems have information on the treatment providers in the area and try and get people that come in and identify as having these issues connected to the right care. And then another big one is through jolt harm reduction, because they are in the communities, they are in the neighborhoods with their outreach teams. And mm-hmm. so they're able to kind of, you know, get word out. And, you know, a lot of people seeking treatment is usually through word of mouth. And I think a lot of that is because of historical impacts of trauma through healthcare systems. And so if people don't trust the healthcare system, mm-hmm. They're not likely to seek care from it. So trying to kind of remove some of that, and a lot of that's broken down and by people's word of mouth of, hey, I know someone who got treatment here, it went well. So we're hoping that people are able to, you know, start those conversations with people that they love and care about, because you know, these issues impact such a large population of, you know, people from teenagers all the way to the elderly. We've seen overdose deaths in all of those.
Okay, so I want to go back to a term that you use, harm reduction. But before we get into that, I'd like to remind any listeners who may have just joined us that you're listening to 106.3 on your FM dial, WPNV. And the show you're listening to is How Do You Feel? The show that's dedicated to your health and your wellness and is sponsored by our own Peoria City County Health Department. I'm your host, Lorene King, and today I am visiting with Elizabeth Hensall, who is a licensed clinical social worker. So it is her goal and her mission to see that anyone who may be using these substances illegally or improperly can get assistance, and they don't expect you to just go cold turkey. They're going to assist you with additional medication to help you withdraw from the misuse of the substances and so that you become well again.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, this term, first of all, let me just ask you this, because you said that one of the things that counteracts substance abuse is, you say Narcan?
Narcan. For opioid use.
Mm-hmm. And so I know that some law enforcement facilities have it. Yes. So do you train them? Does the health department train them in the use of Narcan?
We do not. I believe that takes place through Unity Place and their contract. They get a lot of Narcan free from the state. And then, yes, there are leave behind programs with law enforcement, fire departments. The goal with those are that, you know, if they go and respond to a call for an overdose, mm-hmm. that, you know, if it's at someone's house and it's a place of, you know, known use, that they can both administer it right away on site, because we know it saves people's lives and it pushes the drugs right off of the brain, the receptors on the brain. And so it reverses an overdose. And then a lot of times they'll leave behind some Narcan too. So should someone overdose again in the future. Mm-hmm. We know that probably most reversals that are taking place are happening with just friends or family reversing someone's overdose, and they're never even reported to the hospital or to any kind of law enforcement.
Okay. So
that's one of the great things that Jolt Harm Reduction has been able to do, is get Narcan in the hands of people who are most likely to die of an overdose, and then and then help train them on ways to reduce harm. Because the biggest thing is we want to keep people alive so that they can reach recovery. That, mm-hmm. you know, that recovery is possible, and that sometimes that's a long process, but you can't recover if you've died. And so, you know, it's really important that we get people some harm reduction tools while they're waiting for treatment or until they're ready for treatment.
Now, if they get Narcan administered on the street, it's free. But mm-hmm. what if somebody knows they need that? Do they have to buy it? And does the state provide it or does the federal government provide it? You know, how are you able to get your inventory and disperse it?
They are able to get it now through a pharmacy without a prescription, but it does cost. But they can get Narcan without a cost, either through Unity Place. Sue Tisdale helps run that program. She trains as well as distributes Narcan for free. And then Jolt Harm Reduction. They could contact Jolt directly, Google them, you know, them, and reach out to them, and they will get people Narcan if they need it. So if you're concerned about a family member and you want Narcan on hand, or you're concerned about yourself because, you know you're taking opiates in a way that is dangerous, then, you know, having that medication on hand and letting people in your life know, you know, how to use it. And that medication is either given through an injection or, which is easy to do, or through a nasal spray, just like if you had, you know, used a cold medicine that you mm-hmm. use a nasal spray. So it's really easy and safe to use. And if someone is given it and they're not experiencing an overdose, nothing will happen. It's not a dangerous thing. So, yeah, that's a good.
So is it good for teens as well as elderly?
Yes, yes. Anyone who, you know, might be overdosing from the medication, mm-hmm. it can be administered to anyone. And so, you know, if parents think their child may have friends or may be, experimenting with drugs, it doesn't hurt to have it on hand. And that's one of those things that feels kind of contradictory. It seems like we should just say no and just mm-hmm. Promote abstinence from substance use, but we know that the reality is that people are using these substances, and so keeping them safe until we can get them help is really important.
So it sounds like you're relying on word of mouth, or you're relying on the hospitals when they treat somebody to make individuals and groups aware of this particular service that you offer.
Yes. So people can reach out to the health department mm-hmm. directly. And I'll give you that number if they would like to contact. And they can even just call and talk about if they have concerns about somebody that they know, what would that be like, the process of getting them into treatment if they are using alcohol or opiates in a way that is dangerous. And so they can call 309-679-6601. That's 309-679-6601.
Mm-hmm. What department is that?
And that is at the health department. That is my direct line.
Oh, that's your direct line.
That is. And I will get people that information they need.
Okay.
And I do all the screening intake for our medication-assisted treatment program.
Okay. So now I want to get back to that other term that was mentioned earlier, and that's harm reduction. And I had read that, and so I went online myself to look at it. Okay, what does harm reduction mean? So can you tell us about it? Because, you know, when I read it, it's some strategies that are used because they recognize that a lot of people who may want to curtail their behavior are not able to do it alone without assistance. And then I saw that the harm reduction plans, you know, might have a lot of different principles that are engaged. And so can you share that with our audience, please?
Sure. So, you know, harm reduction is a public health strategy to help reduce the harm to people engaged in behavior that might otherwise be harmful. So when we think of we get in a car, we drive a car, we put on our seatbelts so that if we're in an accident, we don't go flying out the window.
Okay.
So, you know, we all engage in harm reduction at some level, most of us do.
Yes, for different things.
Yes. And so when we talk about substance use, you know, things like not using alone, testing your substances, which can be done, there can be testing done at Jolt Harm Reduction. They will test the substances before people use them so they know what's in them, which sounds kind of crazy, but, you know, but people need to know what they're using and choosing to use.
And what the consequences might be.
Yes. And so that they can choose to use less or choose to, you know, use in a place, you know, never using alone.
Or less frequently.
Yes. It may be, you know, one of the things, if I'm working with somebody who is drinking heavily and wants to stop drinking, you know, we talk about, you know, so you have 7 or 8 drinks in a day. Can you have 6 drinks? Can you commit to just a little bit less until we can kind of work on that behavior and then decrease it a little bit? So harm reduction looks at anything to reduce the harm to the individual is a positive thing. And then the more we've reduced harm, the more likely they are to be able to access treatment.
And we know that it impacts even genders differently because you see information that says, you know, a woman can drink this many glasses of wine, but a man might be able to drink 2 if she can only drink 1. So it's gender and other things are involved in that.
Yeah. And, you know, and people who have family histories of substance use need to be thinking about how those same substances may impact them because, you know, not only is there probably a, you know, we believe there's a genetic component to substance use disorders.
Forgot about that one.
Yes. But also, if you grew up in a house where people around you were misusing substances, there's a good chance you're going to develop those same kind of things. And there's often trauma with that. And we know that substance use disorder and trauma go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say that there probably isn't anyone who's misusing substances that doesn't have some kind of trauma in their life, which doesn't have to be like a huge, you know, thing. It can be that they never developed appropriate coping skills or even things like divorce in a family can cause a trauma that one person may be able to deal really well with that and another person may not. And we don't know what that is. We just know that it does impact people differently. And so understanding that link between trauma and substance use is important.
Okay, so what I read about the Harm Reduction Coalition, it says they have 8 guiding principles and it tells us that drug use is inevitable. And we know, because like if I go into the hospital, have surgery, they're going to use some drugs on me.
Yes.
So people are going to use drugs. It's just we want to make sure they use them in a way that's safe and ethical. So like one of the principles says the cold turkey approach doesn't work for everyone.
That's absolutely true. Is that, you know, especially for things like alcohol and opioid use. Stopping suddenly can be quite harmful to people. And so a lot of times they need to detox or decrease use or use medications to support their, because we know people who drink really heavily can have a seizure if they suddenly were to stop drinking or, you know, there's real impacts to people's health. So it's not as simple as, you know, just change your behavior, just, you know, do it differently. And so I think having an understanding of that is really important.
Okay. Then the other one says, improving quality of life should be the main treatment goal.
Yeah. And I think it's important to let people set their own goals. You know, at the health department, we really value that, you know, the patient gets to be, you know, largely in charge of what their goals are and what, you know, what may be a goal for me and what I want for my life may not match up to what someone else wants for their life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of working with the patient to figure out what those goals are is really important because, you know, substance use isn't about a moral failing. It's about, you know, the impact of trauma and the ability and the desire to, you know, cope with it and then developing a misuse. So it's really important that they set their own goals for themselves of what do they want their life to look like and how can we help them get there?
Yes, because it says that people who use drugs should have an active part in their treatment. And then it also says that individuals and agencies, you know, who are providing harm reduction treatment should be non-judgmental. And you said that non-judgmental and evidence-based.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, it's really important. We have a lot of people who come in for medication-assisted treatment to address their heroin use, but they also sometimes use cocaine, but we're not treating their cocaine use. We don't have a medication to treat cocaine use. So we talk about what are some things they could do to address the fact that they're still using other substances.
Mm-hmm.
We do that largely through counseling because people are using it to fill some gap in their life.
To cover some pain in their life.
Absolutely, yes. And so I think because of that, you know, we want to make sure that they feel like they're not judged, that, you know, I listen to people's stories all the time, and the lives that people have lived, that we serve at our medication assistant treatment program, you know, I think it's no wonder that they've developed some issues and then tried to find the best way to cope with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, it's helpful for none of us to stand in judgment of, right. you know, what has brought this person to this place in their life. And they just need to feel accepted. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things, is that people struggling with substance use are often driven to the margins of society. And so they feel really disconnected. And so bringing people in and feeling like they have support mm-hmm. through their treatment with us, I think, is really important, because they then start to feel reconnected. And we know that connection helps to heal trauma. And so feeling like they have people behind them that are cheering for them and hoping that they are successful in their treatment, and also patient with them, because recovery, you know, relapse is often part of recovery. And so when people mess up, we want them to be able to keep going forward instead of that being what derails them and totally throws them off.
So when you're treating these individuals, is there any point at which you engage the family members so that they can be involved and assist?
Yeah, absolutely. If people have family that they want to be involved, you know, we always make that an option, and they can have them as much or as little involved as possible. A lot of times that's tricky, because a lot of trauma often comes from
the family.
A family
of
origin.
They're the ones who caused it.
Absolutely. And so, you know, sometimes it's helping that person set healthy boundaries with family members who may actually drive some of their substance use, or, you know, maybe the parents, or, you know, maybe someone else in their family is struggling. But yes, we've also had people who have really great support systems, or, you know, maybe they grew up in a really difficult home, but now they have a husband or a wife or a partner who is supportive of their recovery and is able to engage in that treatment with them. And we want to get everybody on the same page, because, you know, medication-assisted treatment is not trading one drug for another. These are safe, they're effective, they're highly monitored, and the person gets a lot of contact with both the therapist and with the medical provider to make sure that they are doing well. So it's not just, here, we're going to mm-hmm. throw one drug at you so you don't go buy another drug. That's not the approach. And I think that's hard for families to understand sometimes.
Well, you know, I marvel at all the services that our local health department offers for the residents in our community. And so here's another one that's very valuable, but yet not widely known as you'd like it to be. So to our listeners, what do you say to the listeners in our final minutes that they can do to help prevent opiate abuse or misuse of these substances? What can the community members do, either individually or as a group?
I think that's great. I think, you know, one of the things is talking about this stuff, not keeping it in the shadows. The more people talk about their own experience with these things, the less shame there is attached. And also, I think it's really important for people to know, you know, if you were prescribed an opiate from a doctor, talking to your doctor about how long is it okay for me to take this. And then if you have leftover medication, there are ways to dispose of it properly. OSF has a drop right outside the emergency department doors. It's like a mailbox. You can drop any unused prescriptions in, close the door. No one knows you dropped it off. With at Hy-Vee, they're at one of the pharmacies, and some fire departments as well have a prescription drop-off box. So we don't want people to keep things like prescription painkillers.
So it could harm someone else.
Yes, and a lot of times, you know, I work with a lot of people who will talk about their first time using was, oh, I got into my mom's or my grandma's cabinet and I found pain pills, and before I knew it, I couldn't stop using
them. Wow.
And so we want people to make sure they're disposing of it properly, they're not keeping them. If you do take those medications, you're keeping them locked up, and that you're having conversations. If you've got kids that are teenagers or college kids, talking about the dangers of misusing medications, not just prescription painkillers, mm-hmm. but other types of prescription medications that, while they may be safe under the guidance of a medical provider, mm-hmm. are not safe to take just because they come from a pharmacy. And so, you know, we see that more and more with younger kids. And so, you know, having these conversations openly about about people's families' histories with substance use, their own histories with substance use, and just trying to destigmatize that. So, and if people need care, supporting, you know, family members and friends to get that care in a non-judgmental way. Like, hey, can I sit with you while you call somebody on the phone to get into treatment, to get care? And so sometimes people just need that encouragement.
Okay. And then if they can't pronounce all those terms and all those words you mentioned earlier, they can contact you at the health department. So you said your direct line is 309-679-6601.
That's correct.
So if you don't answer, they can leave a message,
they
right?
They absolutely can. And I'm only there part-time. So I try and get people called back, and we try and get them in for treatment as quickly as possible. With our medical provider there at the health department.
Okay. So it sounds like we need to get you more visibility in the community so that you can help spread the word and maybe get, you said you get money from the state for this, and maybe we should apply for some federal grants to get literature and information and supplies.
Yes. And we're always looking for ways to expand services. And then, yes, our partnership with Heartland really helps us to provide these services to the community since they are a federally qualified health center.
That's true. They really are. Remember that. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us about medication. It's really medically assisted treatment programs for misuse of alcohol and opiates.
Yes.
And they're going to, if they deal with the health department and you, they're not going to be judged. It's not like a stigma. It's just like any other illness that requires treatment in order to get better.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If you would go to your doctor for, you know, for diabetes or right. for heartburn, then
or for your COVID shot.
Absolutely. Then you can feel as comfortable that that's the kind of treatment you will receive when you come in to see us.
Okay, and you receive respectful treatment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you again. So I just want our audience to know you've been listening to How Do You Feel, the show that's sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. And this show is dedicated to your health and wellness. This show airs at 11 a.m. on Saturday. If you hear it and you know someone, it could be a family member, it could be a friend or a neighbor that might benefit by contacting the health department to get some assistance regarding measured and appropriate use of substances, you can call Elizabeth Hensel at the health department, 309-679-6601. If she doesn't answer, you can leave a message. She'll get back to you because she's not full-time yet. But she'll get back to you. So, you know, maybe we can help elevate this service and awareness of it so that she can be full-time. Or maybe they get another part-time person to fill in. And if you missed the show at 11 a.m. on Saturday, it repeats at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. If neither of those times work for you, you may also go to the WPNV webpage, which is WPNV.org, and look for podcasts. And the one you want to select is How Do You Feel? So you can get information about this and other health topics. And right now, we're going to ask Elizabeth, and she'll come back next year and update us and tell us that more people of color are taking advantage of this service, and we're making a difference in the occurrence of misuse in Peoria.
We would love that, and I would love to come back and talk more about that.
All right. So thank you so much. I've been your host, Lorraine King, and I thank you so much for listening.
Now is always the right time.